Live from Washington, it's the Inside Scoop, with all the news the government does not want you to know. Now, here's the host of the Inside Scoop, Congressional Attorney Mark Levine.
Good evening, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. Those of you that watch the show frequently know that I often devote an entire hour to a single issue, but sometimes there's so much news that the government does not want you to know that I have to try to cram it all into one show. I'm going to do my best. If you look here, I've got dozens of newspaper articles. I have clips. I have videos. There's a lot going on from the administration, hiding things. We find out from Scott McClellan speaking out on a number of issues. We find out that, of course, the administration did authorize torture. And now, in fact, they are busy punishing the judges that want to give a fair trial to people in Guantanamo Bay. A lot going on with the administration. In the presidential election, we have the Democrats still fighting amongst each other in the last breath of the battle between Obama and Clinton. We have John McCain making his own blunders on the Iraq War as his health issues come out. And everything from the Texas polygamy decision to another civil rights justice decision to a battle over the GI Bill, there's a lot in the news. And I'm going to try to address all of it I can, but it is the week in review, and that means that you listeners, can come in and join in the discussion. And all you have to do that is to call in. The toll-free number is 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. And I encourage you, if there's something that I've missed in one of these topics, to give us your point of view. So I hope you'll call and do that. The first issue is the Democrats. And you probably know that the decision was made in Michigan and Florida to give each of the delegates half a vote. I'm proud of myself. I predicted this on the Inside Scoop a month ago. It actually is, I think, the fairest solution. I respect those Obama supporters who say, well, Michigan and Florida, they went out of order. They should get no delegates at all. They weren't following the rules. I respectfully disagree with them. You've got to count Michigan and Florida. You can't have a nomination based on only 48 states. After all, the people did nothing wrong. Just because the Republican governor and Republican legislature of Florida tried to mess around with the Democrat states, and just because the Michigan legislature messed up, you can't blame the people. They should get half a vote, but not a full vote, because the rules were violated. It was done intentionally. And if we're ever going to get a handle on this process, we've got to make sure that people follow the rules. If there's one thing I hope we've learned from this entire process, it is that it's a mess. It's not any way to choose a presidential nominee. Whether it's the superdelegates or the fact that Iowa and New Hampshire always get to go first, it's not fair, and you're always going to have these states leapfrogging over each other. This year, we almost had the nomination battle begin in 2007, a year in advance. That makes no sense at all. That's why I advocate Congress stepping in. It's the only way when you have competing state interests. They need to step in. They need to set one primary schedule. And you know what? I'm sorry, New Hampshire. I'm sorry, Iowa. I'm sure you're very good people, but you don't always get to go first. It's not fair. We need to switch it up. Now, I'm willing to respect the idea that maybe a smaller state should go first. Maybe California shouldn't go first. Okay, there are all kinds of different ways to do that. And if you call in and you're curious, I'll give you my own suggestions on the matter. But basically, it should be random. It should be different regions. I like what the Democrats tried to do. You know, New Hampshire, Iowa, Nevada, South Carolina, the South, the East, the Midwest, and the West. So maybe next year, maybe it should be Rhode Island and North Carolina and Indiana, and perhaps Nevada. We had Nevada. Let's say New Mexico. The idea is that we should go for the four different regions, but we should give each state a chance. And this whole Michigan and Florida debacle has hopefully convinced us to finally fix it so it won't be a problem again. Hillary Clinton knows the race is over. She may not admit that to her supporters. She may not admit that to herself, but the race is over. A number of superdelegates are waiting in the wings. As soon as Tuesday comes, mark my words, at the end of the Montana and South Dakota primaries, which is coming up very shortly, you will see a number of superdelegates, probably within 24 hours, give the final votes to Obama. He will be the Democratic nominee. At that point, it is crucial that the Clinton supporters join in and become part of the unanimous victory. Now, let me tell you something. This is not going to be easy. I have had a number of people in both camps, Obama camp and Clinton camp, make all kinds of really terrible allegations. And I think it's time for it to stop. Now, without pointing fingers, and there's a lot of finger pointing to go around, I think it's actually up to the Obama supporters to be bigger about this. Obama supporters, you've got your victory. Obama is going to be your Democratic nominee. And yet I guarantee you Barack Obama cannot win the presidential election unless we bring the Hillary Clinton supporters on board. So it's time to forget the past, to look past all the insults back and forth, mostly by supporters of Obama and Clinton, though some by the candidates themselves. It's time to look past all that and look at bringing the Democratic Party together. And interestingly, it is the Obama supporters that have the harder task. They've got to convince a wounded Clinton public to come forward and to join as part of the process. And I encourage them to do so. I have to tell you this. Hillary Clinton fought a very good fight. She came away with probably about 49% of the popular vote. That's a very, very close victory, very close defeat. And you can understand why her supporters feel like, hey, they just missed it. But one thing I really don't like, and I've seen this with Clinton supporters, I've seen this with Obama supporters, and again, hey, you disagree? Call in, 888-48-MARK, and let me know why. But I think that there are too many supporters on both sides that are too quick to play the race and the gender card. Now, I know the media is pushing us in that direction. The media loves the novelty of having the first female candidate, the first African-American, half-African-American candidate to run for president. And so they push us in that direction, and they constantly talk about the black vote and the women's vote and the white vote and all of that. But we shouldn't play by those rules. And you've probably seen the same angry emails that I've seen between friends of mine, colleagues of mine, listeners to the radio and TV show, and they're mad at each other. The Clinton supporters are mad at the Obama supporters, and Obama supporters are mad at the Clinton supporters. And you hear some, and I dare say a minority, although a loud minority, some African-Americans say, well, Hillary supporters are all racist. Well, there may be a few that are, but I think most of them simply like Hillary Clinton. And you hear Hillary Clinton supporters say, oh, Obama supporters are all sexist. Well, there may be a few that are, but honestly, they just like Barack Obama better. And we need to stop playing these cards so freely. And that's why I was extremely troubled and very upset to see another pastor at the Trinity Church, a Catholic priest, as it happens, Father Flegger, delivered an address that I found, well, pretty offensive. You've probably seen it, but if you haven't, I hesitate to show it. Still, I think you need to see it. Let me play for you Father Michael Flegger and some of the really awful things that he had to say.
It must be honest enough to expose white entitlement and supremacy wherever it raises its head. I said before, and I really don't want to make this political, because you know I'm very unpolitical. But Reverend Moss, when Hillary was crying, and people said that was put on, I really don't believe it was put on. I really believe that she just always thought, this is mine. I'm Bill's wife. I'm white. And this is mine. I just got to get up and step into the plate. And then out of nowhere came, hey, I'm Barack Obama. And she said, oh, damn, where did you come from? I'm white. I'm entitled. There's a black man stealing my show. She wasn't the only one crying. There was a whole lot of white people crying. I'm sorry. I don't want to get you in any more trouble. The live streaming just went out again.
Well, I'm afraid he did get everyone in a lot of trouble. And if you don't know why that is offensive, well, let me explain it to you. I think you probably do. Father Flegger has, first of all, he's totally misunderstood Hillary Clinton, all right? It's a total slap at her. Now, You can argue, you can say, well, she expected to win. Okay, she was the front runner, and that makes sense. But this has nothing to do with white and black. Nothing whatsoever to do with white and black. It wasn't, I'm entitled to win as a white person. She felt she was entitled to win because she thought she was the best candidate. Obama felt he was entitled to win because he was the best candidate. And so did John Edwards and Chris Dodd and all of them. This is a man, and yes, he happens to be a white man, but this is a man who's playing the race card big time. And he's also playing the sex card. This is one of the most sexist things I have seen. Oh, Hillary Clinton's crying. First of all, she didn't cry, but let's leave that aside. Presidential candidates should be able to express their emotions, whether they are male or female. I don't want an emotionless presidential candidate. I don't want someone who sits there and feels no emotion when trouble is happening, particularly if it's the kind that gets us into war. This is an extremely sexist comment. Now, Barack Obama did what he had to do. He finally quit the church. He should have probably done it earlier. This was clearly the last straw. And Father Flegger is now apologizing? I'm sorry, Father. I don't accept your apology. Here you are receiving taxpayers' money because you, like all churches, it's a tax-exempt institution, and you're going around and it's not that you're mocking a presidential candidate. I mock presidential candidates. That's fair. You're doing so in a blatantly racist and sexist way. And so, yes, Father Flegger, I think you are racist, and I think you are sexist. And you are doing exactly the wrong thing. You are hurting Obama more than 1,000 Swift Boat ads ever could. You are hurting Obama more than Karl Rove ever could. You are destroying his campaign, and you're supposed to be someone who's supporting him. So, all I can say about all of this, and I hope to put it to rest, and I guarantee you after the break I'm going after John McCain, I would hope people don't judge Obama for this. I'm afraid they will. I'm afraid he's done all he can to distance himself. But I don't hear this kind of rhetoric coming from Obama. I do hear it coming from the members of the church. And I've been asked by people who support Obama, as well as those opposed to him, why was he a member of this church for 20 years? And you know what? I think it's a fair question. I don't think it's a racist question. Let me give you my perspective on the issue. Barack Obama had a very unusual upbringing for an American. He was raised in Hawaii. He was raised by his white mother and his white grandparents. And I don't think he had much of his African-American identity. He didn't really know his African father very well. He went to very good schools. And I think he wanted to help the poor. He really wanted to help and see how lower and middle class African Americans live. So he went to South Side of Chicago, a very prominent African American area. We have a lot of lower middle class people, and joined the biggest church there. He joined Oprah's church. Because sometimes you have to reach out to people who may not always have the same views you do. And I don't attribute these views to Obama. Instead, I recognize that Obama was reaching out to people with differing views. We've seen Obama reach out to Republicans with different views, and he's reaching out to these people as well. So all I can say about this is that I hope all of this is over, and I'm going to come back and talk more about John McCain after the break. If you want to comment on anything I've said, if you disagree with me, hey, give us a call. 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. Give me your point of view. We'll be right back after this.
She's had more than a dozen fractures. And in the next few years, she faces two major surgeries to strengthen her fragile bones. She's only 10 years old. Most people don't worry about fragile bones until late in life. For those with osteogenesis imperfecta, brittle bones are a concern throughout their lifetime. Find out how you can strengthen this child's future.
Diabetes is a killer. After I was diagnosed, I didn't feel sick, so I didn't listen to my doctor. Then it struck. I had a heart attack, then a stroke, and I was only 49.
Most people with diabetes also have high blood pressure and cholesterol, which can cause severe heart damage. In fact, 2 out of 3 people with diabetes die from heart disease or stroke.
Don't let diabetes destroy your life.
Call for your free diabetes survival guide. Choose to live.
Mama.
We are back to the Inside Scoop. Call in live and let your voice be heard. Here again, your host, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. Lots of news the government does not want you to know about. Everything from the campaign to domestic politics to foreign policy. We're going to cover it all, at least as much as we can. And also your concerns. Just give a call, 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. Last word I want to say on the Obama-Clinton matter and racism and sexism, and I know everyone in the media is talking about it. The way I look at it is people are hurt. There's a long history of racism in this country. There's a long history of sexism in this country. Virtually every minority has been abused in some way in this country, and it continues. And that includes women, that includes African Americans, that includes Latinos, that includes gay and lesbian Americans, disabled Americans, overweight Americans. We've had all kinds of mistreatment of Americans. And people are hurt. And some people, I think, are taking that hurt and they're putting it all in this candidate, as if Obama would be the candidate of African Americans, which I don't think he is. I think he's a candidate for Americans. Just as Hillary Clinton is, if she's the candidate for women, which I don't think she is. She's a candidate for all Americans. And so what I think people have done is they've taken their personal pain, their own slights, the own racism or sexism that they face in their own lives, and they've funneled it all into this candidate. And I hear anguish between people who argue sometimes between Obama and Clinton supporters, and some of the worst, I got to say, is between white female Clinton supporters and black male Obama supporters, though there are all kinds. And all I can say is this. If you add up all the minorities in America, all the people who have been mistreated, you add up women and African Americans and Latinos and gay and lesbians and Jews and Muslims and atheists and disabled people and overweight people and poor people. Don't forget poor people, one of the most abused minorities that there are. If you throw in all the minorities, Catholics, for example, we become the majority. There's extremely few Protestant, white, male, rich, straight, married, perfectly looking, non-disabled people in America. And I don't wish them any harm. But all the minorities together become the majority. And therefore, we need to stick together. This isn't about Obama or Hillary. This is about the policies that both of them stand for. And it's also about the person that's opposing them, John McCain, someone who gets all too little discussion these days. John McCain, in fact, had a blunder the other day that was reported in the Washington Post when he said that the United States had drawn down its troops in Iraq to pre-buildup levels. Let's show that on the screen if we can. We had John McCain, and he said that the... let's get rid of that. There we go. John McCain said that we'd drawn our troops down to pre-surge levels. Well, we haven't, in fact. The troop level in Iraq is about 155,000. It's well above 130,000. This is the same John McCain who said that that Al-Qaeda were part of the Sunni terrorists, Iran was arming, when actually, of course, they were Shia terrorists that Iran was arming. He couldn't tell the difference between Shia and Sunni. So you have John McCain, who claims his specialty is on Iraq, and he doesn't seem to know the difference, one or the other. He doesn't seem to know what our troops are. He doesn't seem to know who our Shia or Sunni are. Now, you could say, I don't know, maybe he's getting forgetful in his old age. Or you could say, no, that's an age-based attack. Don't do that. So fine. He's getting forgetful of whatever age he is. He doesn't seem to know the right policies. And what makes all this interesting is that McCain attacks Obama for not having served. That's right. He says, in effect, McCain says Obama can't even argue with him because he didn't serve. And their biggest fight right now is over the GI Bill. You may know about Senator Webb of Virginia and his bill to help American GIs. This is a bill based on the old GI Bill to allow people in the military a chance to go to college. It's something that the military talks often about in supporting and trying to encourage people to join the military. Let me tell you, it's not so easy to join the military these days. You might be sent off to die in Iraq or Afghanistan, and we're pushing. We're pushing hard to get high school graduates. We're even taking people who've committed felonies into the troop levels in Iraq and Afghanistan. But Senator Webb has put forward this bill, and the bill would say that if you've served 3 years in the military, you would get paid and be able to go to the best public university in your state. John McCain and the Republicans oppose it. That's right, they oppose it. It's kind of strange. You think they'd want to support our troops, right? That's the thing that Republicans are always arguing about, support our troops. Well, they're not supporting our troops very much where it comes to the GI Bill. This, of course, isn't the first time that Republicans haven't supported our troops. When you look at the failure to have body armor or the failure to have sufficient vehicle armor, the kind that can stop IEDs, the explosion devices. When you look at the fact that we didn't have enough troops to go into Iraq in the first place, or there was no post-invasion plan, or the fact that even when the troops come home, we are mistreating them, as we know in the Walter Reed scandal, or in the fact that we're not simply treating enough of them with post-traumatic stress disorder. Or when we look at the fact that we have extended tours. We promised these people that they would be here, our troops, that they would be serving for 12-month tours. And now they're serving 15 months. It's simply not fair. It doesn't make sense. So on the GI Bill, we find that there are very strong differences between the Democrats and the Republicans on this. I want to show some of them to you, if I can. Let me working on this right now. I want this to work. Let me also say this, though. It's very interesting to me that John McCain, who supports so many of George Bush's policies, is keeping the president out of sight. And he's doing so in taking huge fundraisers, but making sure that those fundraisers are not being recorded. He's not going to make the same mistake Obama did by having open public fundraisers that can get himself into trouble. My clip is ready. Let me now play for you. First of all, this is the Army promising people the benefits they will get if they join the military.
I did all my research, and I can get money for college.
Without the Air Guard, college was not an option.
The Guard helped me pay for my college and my books.
The bills that I got from the University of Cincinnati said zero.
Okay, so it's very clear, right? The Army has promised, the military has promised people that they will get benefits for college. Now, listen to John McCain on the GI Bill.
At a time when the United States military is fighting in two wars, one study estimates that Senator Webb's bill will reduce retention rates by 16%.
A 16% drop in retention rates, that is tough to replace. Unless, of course, that same GI Bill would somehow increase recruitment in a way that might offset that loss, which, according to the same study McCain was quoting, it does, by 16%, to be precise.
As usual, John Stewart gets it right. So because we are more fair to people in the military, they want to leave sooner and go to college sooner. Okay. But because of that benefit, more people want to join the military. It balances itself out. At the end of the day, all we're doing is helping people in the military go to college. Now, you would think that someone who claims to be pro-veteran would support something like that. After all, John McCain and the president and all their people, they're often saying, support the troops. For example, I have a few clips for you.
I watch with regret as the House of Representatives voted to deny our troops the support necessary to carry out their new mission.
Anyone can say they support the troops, and we should take them at their word.
If you really want to support the troops, don't cut their legs out from under them.
We do expect those who say they're going to support the troops to support them.
Whether you agree with their policies or not, you should be supporting the troops in the field.
And I ask you to support our troops in the field and those on their way.
Okay, so it's very clear. And again, John Stewart does a good job of bringing all the clips together. What does support our troops mean to Republicans? It means supporting the president's policy. If you agree with everything George Bush does, including no post-war invasion, no body armor, no benefits for GIs, you are supporting our troops. Republicans say that whenever you agree with the president, you are supporting our troops. And if you disagree with the president, if you think it's stupid to attack a country that never attacked us, if you think it's idiotic to have no post-war invasion, if you think that throwing all of our troops into the Iraqi basket when we still have enemies in Afghanistan is not very smart, well, then you're not supporting our troops. What's interesting is that when we have a real bill, Jim Webb's bill, a bill that would support our troops, we have so many that are opposed to it on the right. So you heard John McCain's opposition to it. What's interesting is he basically his claim that Obama can't even argue with him about it. Again, got to show John Stewart he has the right response.
Of course, this being the campaign season, Senator McCain had some choice words for those who support this more generous GI bill.
Well, John McCain responded rather heatedly in this statement, quote, "I will not accept from Senator Obama, who did not feel it was his responsibility to serve our country in uniform, any lectures on my regard for those who did."
He's absolutely right. We should not allow military policy to be shaped by those who've never seen combat. To do that would be outrageous. It would be a huge disappointment to anybody that has ever judged themselves on the things. We'll be right back.
So you get the point. This is a man, obviously our president, who refused service. Not only refused service when he would have been drafted. He decided that he wasn't going to go to even the Texas National Guard when he was ordered to do so because, let's face it, he was high on cocaine at the time and he didn't want to pass a drug test. This is the man that's been designating our national policy, who's deciding, our commander-in-chief, what our policy will be in Iraq. And I have to tell you, for McCain to complain about Obama, given all that Bush and Cheney have done, is classic hypocrisy. But hey, if you disagree, here's your chance to call in. Let me know what you think. 888-488-MARCH, 888-488-6275. Lots more to talk about, beginning with Scott McClellan's tell-all book and also our policy in the Middle East. More after this.
Art, a universal language, an expression of culture, of self. And now, thanks to Empowered Women International, a way for emerging and established immigrant and refugee artists and artisans to find hope to earn a living while enriching the lives of all of us. Empowered Women International, making a better America every day. For more information on Empowered Women International's educational programs, or to make a tax-free donation, contact cfripp@aol.com.
Easy to tell which kids have trouble with their eyesight. But that's not always the case. Even though one in four children may have a vision problem, eye doctors tell us the symptoms aren't always so obvious. We do know that 80% of all childhood learning is visual. And without good vision, kids can have trouble learning to read and may fall behind in school. For clues on how to spot the real-life signs of childhood vision problems and what parents can do, visit checkyearly.com. A public service message from the Vision Council of America, and reading is fundamental.
We are back to the Inside Scoop. Call in live and let your voice be heard. Here again, your host, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. Lots of news the government does not want you to know about, and we're going to move on from the election to talk about, well, torture and the things that our government has finally admitted to doing, along with the things that we're continuing to do. Some of it came from Scott McClellan's book, but more from a 370-page report that I'm going to tell you about in just a second. But first, as I always value callers, and they always come first, RC from Vienna, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Thank you, Mr. Levine. Thank you for taking my call. This is only the second time I saw your show.
RC from Vienna, are you there?
Yes. Can you hear me? Hello? Hello, Mr. Levine?
Yes. Welcome.
Oh,
you're on the air.
Thank you kindly. This is only the second time that I have seen your show, and I love it. You're straight on the target. Please continue doing it. It is nice to have alternative news source. I just want to tell you that I enjoy your show very, very much.
And I appreciate calls like this.
Thank you, Mr. Levine.
No, thank you very much for calling in. Keep watching. We're on every Monday at 7 p.m. And if you like the show, you can also listen on the radio. I'm on 89.3 FM. You can hear
me. Oh, yes. Oh.
Tuesday at 7. And always on my website at radioinsidescoop.com. If you miss a show, you can check that out. Thank you for calling.
Thank you. And I will spread the word to my other friends who are politically active.
Okay.
Thank you kindly.
No, thank you. I appreciate
your call. Good luck, Mr. Levine. Wonderful.
You can call me Mark.
All right, Mark. Bye-bye, Mark.
And listen, not all callers are as wonderful or as supportive as RC. If you disagree with me, that's okay, too. Give a call, 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. I do want to talk about, from that wonderful phone call, to the worst of things, and that is torture. Now, the administration has made very clear that they don't torture. They've said it again and again and again and again.
The United States does not condone torture.
We don't torture.
We don't torture.
We don't torture.
We don't torture people. Let me say that again to you. We don't torture people.
Got that? We don't torture people. No, not us. No, we don't torture people. Well, now we know from a 270-page report that there was something that many of us consider torture going on.
In dozens of private talks and meetings, sources said a handful of top advisors discussed specific high-value al-Qaeda prisoners and exactly how those prisoners would be interrogated, whether, for example, they would be slapped, pushed, deprived of sleep, or subjected to simulated drowning called waterboarding. A group that included Vice President Cheney, Condoleezza Rice, Colin Powell, Donald Rumsfeld, George Tenet, John Ashcroft. Discussions about the enhanced interrogation techniques were so detailed, sources said, the interrogations were almost choreographed, down to the number of times the CIA could use a specific tactic.
But Condoleezza Rice, well, she had a different view.
I could ask, since the interrogations took place in 2002 when you were National Security Advisor, at the time were you aware of fully aware of the techniques being used and of the videotape?
Andrea, as I said, the Justice Department has now taken up this matter, and so I don't think that it's appropriate for me to comment further.
Oh, the Justice Department is taking up this matter. I don't think I'll comment further. This is just, it's just torture. It's not that big a deal. It's only against the Eighth Amendment to the United States Constitution. It's not that big a deal. Well, you know, it was Condoleezza Rice that was holding our Constitution upside down. Apparently, she doesn't know how to read it. I will read for her the Eighth Amendment, which says that there shall be no cruel and unusual punishment. Look, the thing about the torture is this. The administration constantly denies that there's torture because they don't qualify what they do as torture. What's interesting, though, and you learn from that clip, is that it went on at the very highest levels of the White House. And we know now that there were numbers of people who tried to stop them from doing that kind of torture. We can show, in fact, articles in the Washington Post. Here we have here, the torture scandal's heroes. Not everyone in the government went along when the Bush administration approved abusive tactics. In fact, the FBI said no. The Justice Department says no. A guy by the name of Pasquale D'Amuro, the chief of counterintelligence of the FBI, the person who first directed FBI agents at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, he said that he wanted nothing to do with snarling dogs, prolonged sleep deprivation, 20-hour interrogation sessions, sexual humiliation. He said no. And the reason he said no is very interesting. One, well, he said it's not American values. But two, even if you are willing to throw away American values, as all those high-level officials you saw were willing to do, it wouldn't be useful in a court of law. You see, you can't coerce confessions. They do that in some of our enemies' countries. They do that in Iran. They do that in the Taliban's Afghanistan. They do that in some of our allies, in Egypt and Saudi Arabia. They did that in the former Soviet Union. You're not supposed to do that in America. Also, you can't use it in a court of law. In this article, also in the Washington Post, interrogation tactics were challenged at the White House. It shows that a number of officials came forward. Bruce Swartz, criminal division deputy in charge of international issues, repeatedly questioned the effectiveness of harsh interrogation tactics. So it's not just a question of it's not American values and you can't use it in a court of law, but it's not even effective. We're torturing people for nothing. Because when you torture someone, what do? They say whatever you want them to say. They just want the torture to stop. Wouldn't you say that if you were being tortured? I mean, John McCain, when he was being tortured, turned his back on the United States, said awful things against the U.S. Do I think those things are true? No. Do I think John McCain believed them when he said them? No. He said them because he was being tortured, and I don't blame him a bit. I don't condemn John McCain for condemning his country, for turning his back on his country. No, because he was being tortured. And he was lying just like all of these people are lying when they're being tortured. So the interesting thing is it's not even effective. Again, it wasn't just Bruce Swartz who argued it was doing grave damage to the country's reputation, would taint any legal proceedings. It was officials at Guantanamo Bay. It was FBI agents, FBI Assistant General Counsel Marion Spike Bowman. It was even, believe it or not, Michael Chertoff, our current Homeland Security Secretary, said that he was concerned about the effectiveness of the methods. Interestingly, FBI agents, and this is something that amazing to me was on page A7 of the Washington Post, FBI agents actually started collecting a war crimes file. Our FBI put together a war crimes file against the President of the United States until, well, the file was closed and some of those people who put together the file were fired. And what did you have? You had John Yoo, who I've embarrassed to admit was my classmate at Yale Law School, and he said, it's all okay. It's no big deal. Who was against him? John Ashcroft. John Ashcroft, who agreed with the Patriot Act and some really awful things, he was saying, you can't torture people. Director Robert Mueller of the FBI was saying, you can't torture people. It went up to the very highest levels. Now, who can overrule Ashcroft and Mueller? The Attorney General of the United States is the nation's highest legal officer. Who can overrule the Attorney General of the United States? I can only think of one person in the chain of command. I mean, even Cheney, Vice President Cheney, technically can't overrule the Attorney General. He may have taken charge. He may have done so. This goes to the foot of the President of the United States. It is the President that was choreographing torture. And Condoleezza Rice knew it, and Donald Rumsfeld knew it, and even Attorney General Ashcroft and Robert Mueller did it. They tried to stop it. So it's fascinating to me that we have all these cases, we have all these cases being thrown out, including September 11th hijackers, people that really deserve to go on trial, and if they are found guilty of what they did, convicted, death penalty as far as I'm concerned. I have no problem with that. But you got to prove it in a court of law. And because we tortured them, we can't even prove it anymore. Now here's what's so scandalous about all of this. One, that it happened, okay. That's scandalous. Two, when I said that it happened right here on the Inside Scoop, everyone said, oh, no, there's no proof of that. Now we have the proof. And guess what? It's not on the front pages. It's on the back pages. It's on the back pages of the Washington Post. A7. B6. Why is that? Why isn't this news? Is it that we all know that the president's being torturing people? I mean, maybe we all do know. I mean, certainly people like me have been saying it, but when I said it 3 years ago, 4 years ago, people called me a conspiracy theorist. I said, no, I have sources. They all tell me that the president is allowing torture. But now that it comes out in a reputable source, it's not even news anymore. Now that Scott McClellan, the press secretary, is saying these things, it's not even news anymore. And you know what? It's still going on. It's still going on right now in Guantanamo Bay. In Guantanamo Bay, another article in the Washington Post. In Guantanamo Bay, we have people who are being held without trial. Right here in the Washington Post, we have the colonel says, speaking out cost a medal. The former military chief prosecutor for Guantanamo Bay says that the Defense Department has punished him for saying that he faced political pressure to speed up the cases and to use evidence derived from torture. You see, these aren't fair trials. These aren't due process. This isn't the Constitution at work. These are military tribunals behind closed doors where everyone, defense lawyers, prosecutors, and judges, works for George Bush. So here we have a prosecutor who's been, this is Air Force Colonel Morris Davis, who's been denied a medal for 2 years because he said, he testified under oath at pretrial hearings that the top legal advisor for military commissions had tampered with the prosecution and was using politics to drive critical legal issues. They are making sure, they say now that he won't get the medal that most prosecutors get because they say he didn't serve honorably. Telling the truth is not honorable in America anymore. Telling the truth when you have people ruining military prosecutions by trying to use them for political reasons. And it's not just the prosecutors. It's even the judges. Here's something in a tiny little article in the Washington Post. I have it blown up right here on the screen. Something that you probably didn't even notice. The judge has been dismissed in the Guantanamo Bay case. Why? Because he said that the military prosecutor had to give evidence to the defense. The military prosecutor had to give evidence to the defense. Well, that's something that's required in every criminal prosecution. It's required under the Brady case, the famous case. You got to let the accused know what the evidence is against you. Now, why is that? Is that because, well, we're being nice to terrorists? No, because according to the Sixth Amendment to the United States Constitution, you have the right to be confronted with the witnesses against you. This is basic constitutional values. And when the judge in the Guantanamo Bay case tried to do these basic constitutional values, he was thrown out on his ear because he wasn't a judge that's appointed by the president for life. He was a military hack. He tried to do the right thing as an American, and an Army Colonel, Peter Brownback, was thrown out on his ear. And now it looks like we may not even be able to try Omar Khadr. Look, these people may well be guilty, but when we torture people, when we try to make the judges and the prosecutors do everything we want, we don't get the prosecutions we need. There's so much more to talk about this week, and I do want to talk about a number of things. If you want to call in, please do so. The toll-free number is 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. There's so much more going on. There's the Texas decision on the polygamous case. There's a New York decision that's gotten very little attention. And it is the decision by the New York governor to say that he will recognize, that New York will recognize same-sex marriages that are made elsewhere. In making that decision, New York has become the third state to recognize gay marriages, and it almost got no news at all. Now that 20% of gay couples throughout the nation will have equal rights to straights. The nice thing about this story is that it wasn't a story. People are starting to get used to the idea. We'll be right back after this.
Prevent wildfires.
Fire. Why don't you just wash your car at home?
When I wash my car, everything runs down the street and down into the storm drains. With all the chemicals and the soaps and waxes, the last thing I want to do is poison my own drinking water.
At least here, it's all contained and recycled on site.
That's why I also take my car in for oil changes instead of doing it myself. I might take a chance on spilling stuff.
You know what the best part is?
What?
More time to kick back and watch the game.
How far would you go to protect the planet?
I want you to build an ark.
Here we go.
Okay, that's good.
Oh, okay. Ow!
Maybe there's another way.
People, the flood is imminent.
Is it too much to ask for a little precipitation?
Go to fightglobalwarming.com to find out what you and your community can do to reduce global warming pollution.
Somewhere around the world, there are men and women of the armed forces risking their lives, helping rebuild communities after natural disasters, collecting toys for needy children, tutoring kids in school. These are your sons and daughters who work to keep us safe, secure, and free. Dedicated men and women who put their country first.
We are back to the Inside Scoop. Call in live and let your voice be heard. Here again, your host, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to know, giving that to you is a full-time job. I'm not going to get through with all my articles today, but that's okay. As I told RC when she called in, you can check out my website, radioinsidescoop.com. You can watch on television every week here. We have the Inside Scoop, same time, same channel. I hope you'll check it out, and I hope you'll call in and join in the discussion. I do want to bring up what happened with Scott McClellan. We've got a little bit of him right here. Again, another Washington Post article. And what we have here is Scott McClellan getting in a lot of trouble. Now, who is Scott McClellan, of course? He is the former press secretary for the president, for George Bush. And he was a very loyal person. But he decided, finally, to come clean. And he talked about things that, again, we've talked about on this show a lot. And the amazing thing is when these things first come out, the Republicans deny. They say it's not true. Let's talk about what Scott McClellan said. He said that there was a permanent political campaign going on in the White House, that everything they did was for political reasons. Now, this isn't the first person to say this. John Dulio, who used to run the faith-based office, said that these were the Mayberry Machiavellis. Everything they did was for this permanent campaign reasons. And they said that that George Bush had bungled the Iraq War and had also messed up the Katrina, what happened with responding to Hurricane Katrina. The thing that he most complains about, though, is that he was lied to. That Karl Rove and Scooter Libby specifically lied to him about outing the CIA agent Valerie Plame. Now, I remember when that happened, I reported on this show that Scott McClellan is either telling the truth and Rove and Libby are lying, or Scott McClellan is lying. Turns out, Scott McClellan was telling the truth. They lied to his face. They lied to his face and told him to tell the American people. And what has happened to Rove and Libby? Rove continues to help the Republicans in every way he can. He's praised constantly by the Republicans. Republicans love liars. They love folks who mislead the country as long as it means that they'll win elections. If they're going to win elections, they're okay with the liars. The other thing is that Scooter Libby got a pardon. It's okay to out a CIA agent as long as you do it for the cause. I've got Jeff from Shreveport on the line. Jeff, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Hi, how you doing, Mark?
Doing good.
Man, you're depressing me here. You're bringing up all the things about my country right now that truly depress me.
Well, unfortunately, the current government depresses me too, but it's got to be talked about.
You know, the sad thing is that when I talk to my Republican friends, and I do believe my Republican friends have an illness, they don't understand that the people in Guantanamo are supposed to be innocent until proven guilty. And the weird thing about the Republican mind is that when the people are released, when we say that they are not terrorists, and then they go and we release them, and they go away and say, "I was tortured," we go, well, actually, Bush goes, well, they're trained to say that. They're terrorists. You know? And they don't understand, you know, the fact that they're missing. The guy was released. We have declared them not a terrorist.
Here's the thing, Jeff. We can't know what's going on because our government has approved torture at the highest levels. At the same time, and I showed the clips, that they say, we don't torture, we don't torture, we don't torture. We know that the very top level, this isn't Lindy England, some poor West Virginia person in Abu Ghraib. This is the highest levels, Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld, and they are approving torture. And then they want us to say, well, we tortured this guy, but we didn't torture that guy. If you make a firm, bright line and you say, America, we don't torture anyone, then if someone claims to be tortured, then, well, maybe they are lying. But in this case, where you had FBI officials preparing war crimes files and refusing to participate in the matter, I have to say, and this is a really, really sad day for America, that I believe the prisoner in Guantanamo Bay more than I believe the President of the United States. And that's very sad when it comes to that.
Well, I'm going to tell you, it's not just Guantanamo and it's not just 24. All of our heroes, not all our heroes, most of our heroes torture, from RoboCop to Dirty Harry. We glorify the person who breaks the rules, who doesn't go through due process to find out who needs to be punished.
Yeah, and then we have a president that says, I'll catch Bin Laden dead or alive, and you know what? He doesn't succeed. He doesn't succeed. Dirty Harry fails. Dirty Harry may succeed in the movies, but in this case, if they are terrorists, they're getting off. Because if we torture them, we can't use the information in a court of law, and so a lot of times we have to let them go, and we actually end up allowing the terrorists to go free. I mean, you're absolutely right. It's a sad day, and my hope is with the new President Obama, we won't have this anymore. I'll tell you this about John McCain. He used to be against torture before he was for torture. I mean, right? He used to support a law that would stop torture, and then he changed his mind, and now he supported the president's law that would allow torture. So I guess he just feels like Republicans are all about torture, and that's why he supports it.
You know, speaking of that, you know, one thing that also depresses me, which I guess you haven't mentioned, so I'm going to depress myself, is signing statements. I don't understand why people bow to signing statements. The president cannot make law. He can make policy for federal buildings, you know, for departments, but he cannot make law.
Well, you're right, Jeff. I mean, the rule is sometimes Congress gives the president authority to draft regulations. They'll say, for example, we want to make sure that children get health care, and you can work out the details of which children get it, or, you know, we want to stop babies from eating lead paint, but you can use your people at the FDA to designate the proper regulations for what quantity of lead paint is allowed. Sometimes they allow the president to do the details. But in signing statements, you're absolutely right. This isn't a question of details. This isn't a question of regulations. This is the president saying wholesale, I'm just not going to obey this law because I don't want to. And no president has used signing statements as much as George Bush has.
Yeah, and the thing about it is, who cares if he uses them? They're not law. But,
well,
you know, I'm sick and tired of us acting as if, well, I don't know what to do. You know, we don't want to have a constitutional crisis. You know, this is America. Everything's supposed to go smoothly. Well, I'm going to tell you, we have so many people in America right now suffering because of people with this mindset. You know, I mean, Guantanamo is not as rare as you think. Think of that sheriff in Arizona who has all those people suffering who haven't been convicted yet.
And the problem is, Jeff, it starts at the very top. If our president is willing to be lawless, then every local sheriff is willing to be lawless. And they say, well, the president's lawless. Why should I have to follow the law? I carry this around with me wherever I go. The Constitution of the United States, I carry it with me, and I use it as a weapon, as a sword. And this is something that I can use in order to protect myself and that you can use to protect yourself. Jeff, thanks for calling in. I hope you'll call in again sometime. I really appreciate it. I do want to close the show by recognizing my producer, my longtime producer for 3 years. He is the former CEO of this news station, of Channel 10. But more importantly, he's someone who recognized the need for balance on television. And in fact, he was just given an award by the Fairfax County Democratic Committee as the Member of the Year for 2008. So I want to congratulate Jim Southworth and this wonderful
Wine bucket. Crystal wine bucket.
So that they want you to drink. Apparently the job is so hard that
the job requires that.
that you need a lot of drinking. Jim Southworth does a tremendous job behind the scenes, technically, making sure everything works. But more importantly, just in bringing a tremendous group of volunteers. You can't always see the people behind the cameras.
We've got an amazing crew.
And the people in the back room. We really do have an amazing crew. I get to look good. I appear on television.
Well,
but behind the scenes.
3 years ago, we started this, and it was four of us. It was me and actually my daughter, who was very much an activist, and another gentleman who's directing tonight, and his son also, another activist.
Right.
And we thought we had a winner with you. We're sure we do.
Well, I appreciate that. And I got to say something. I'm not a hack of the Democratic Party. You heard today I criticized Obama's, the guy speaking at Obama's church. Poor Jim Webb, Senator Webb. I agree with him on the GI Bill. But I got to tell you, I strongly disagree with his vote on the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. He knows it. In fact, I think he's hiding from me, Jim. I don't know. I'm trying to get him on the show to ask him about it. I call it as I see it, but one of the nice things about having such a guy like Jim behind me, backing me, is he allows me to call it as I see it, even when I attack the Democrats, because I'm just trying to, I don't know, give all the news the government doesn't want you to know.
I have a handle on the blogs. My handle is used to be neutral. And there was a time I would actually have considered myself maybe even marginally a Republican way back. I stayed put. Everything shifted.
Yeah.
And where I'm at now is a centrist, very much. But I never expected that the recognition that us techies might get for something like this. I guess it says that the kinds of things we're doing here are making a difference.
I think it is, and I just want to congratulate you again. It's also for the Sully District as well.
Yeah.
But really what it shows, I think, is that there's very little balance in radio and television today. If you turn on talk radio, 95% is right-wing. Even in a place like Washington, D.C., which has a very liberal populace, you find mostly right-wing radio, and the 90% that don't agree with Rush Limbaugh have no representation.
Right.
And so one of the things that Jim Southworth tries to do here at Channel 10 is to give us that representation, and I very much appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate that very much, but this award's not just mine. It's the many, many crew members that help make this work.
It certainly is.
So thank you very much, Mark.
Thank you, Jim. I hope you'll tune in tomorrow, folks. I've got a very interesting interview. This is a radio interview. So you can turn on it at 89.3 FM, WPFW. Of course, you can always listen wherever you want on the globe at RadioInsideScoop.com. Jeff can listen in Shreveport, Louisiana, or you can listen in Australia if you happen to be there. But we have live video to watch on Mondays. The rest of the week, though, I do have the radio show, and I've got a very interesting guest. His name is Bishop Harry Jackson, and he is a conservative African-American minister who's a Democrat. We've got a lot to talk about, particularly on the role of religion in politics and my problem with the religious right, and specifically with something called the prosperity gospel, the teaching that somehow if you believe in the things that they teach, you'll get all kinds of wealth. And in my view, that's not what Jesus taught. You don't want to miss that very contentious interview. RadioInsideScoop.com tomorrow, 7 p.m. Mark Levine, signing off.